Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio International with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomenon, metaphysics, UFOs, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. The purpose of the program is to raise human consciousness to make this world a better place to live, and with everyone's help, I know we can make this planet a much better and happier place. Before we go on back to our, we were just interviewing Scott Lemriel, the author of The Sayrays Agenda, who's had contact, face-to-face contact with benevolent, mostly human ETs for the past 52 years. And he's coming in by phone from Los Angeles. And our second guest also on the line is Dr. Michael Sala, one of the world's best UFO researchers, coming to us from Hawaii today. But before we go back to our interview, I'd like to thank everyone around the world who's donated to keep this program on the air. If you'd like to donate, just go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just go to the little donate button in the upper right-hand corner. For those who donate $10, I'll send them a special spiritual protection prayer. And for those who donate $25 or more, I'd be very happy to give anyone a free psychic reading. I also wanted to tell everyone again about the wonderful psychic conference that we're having here near Seattle in Port Townsend, Washington. For more information, please go to the website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and click on the tab for the psychic conference or Fort Worden. The dates of the conference are November 21st through the 23rd. And for those who are flying into Seattle for the conference, I will arrange for transportation, either I'll pick you up myself, or we'll have a van waiting for you to bring you right to the conference, so you don't need to worry about getting there. I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's designing my website, my dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, my dear friend Heidi in Switzerland, who's been helping to arrange a radio appearance by Eric von Doniggan and other wonderful European psychics, my angelic and earthly family, and my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder, and my station manager, Eric Kramer, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. You can also always listen to the show live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at www.1150kknw during the show. And just click on the live button after the show. You can always listen to the show at www.outofthisworld1150 by going to the bottom of the page and clicking on our guests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Ted Marr, OTW Radio, that's TEDMAHROTW Radio, and on Facebook at Out of This World Radio. After the bottom of the hour, after 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, we will be taking phone calls. The studio line here is either area code 425-373-5527, that's 425-373-5527, or if you're within Western Washington, the toll-free number here is 1-888-298-5569. So let's go back to our wonderful guest. Scott, are you there?
And I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. And Dr. Sala, are you there?
I am here.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Well, we've talked on lots of interesting things. I wanted to tell you and my many listeners around the world that a week ago on September 12th, we had I had Shirley Andrews, who I consider one of the world's authorities on Atlantis and Lemuria, on the show. And she was just amazing. So if you'd like to listen to her interview, just go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and just click on her name, and you can go to her audio as well. Scott and Dr. Sala, I'd love to ask you about, I'm sure you know about Admiral Byrd's 1947 expedition to Antarctica, and how he went on a plane, I think it was, and he got caught in an energy vortex, and he met some advanced human beings down there. Do you remember that story? Do you remember hearing about that?
I think Michael, you should know begin this story.
Go ahead, Michael. Go ahead.
The story goes that Admiral Byrd, during one of his expeditions down to the Antarctic, that he flew a plane, and that the plane entered into the underground entrance to the subterranean civilization of an earlier earlier surface civilization. I believe they were the Atlanteans or someone related to that kind of very old culture. And basically, we're told, Admiral Byrd was told about the importance of humanity resolving conflicts peacefully, that the Second World War was something that was watched very closely by the people of the peoples of the inner earth, that the atomic weapons were an abomination, that surface humanity really had to kind of like end their development of atomic weapons, and that Admiral Byrd was given all this information, and then he was instructed to relay that to his superiors in Washington, D.C., which he did, and his superiors essentially muzzled him. And we know that Byrd was muzzled because there was the posthumous diaries of Admiral Byrd that were published. And essentially, we know that they're credible because his son, Harley Byrd, who was himself a Navy officer, a senior Navy officer, he basically was had confirmed that indeed Admiral Byrd did have that contact with the, I think it was called the Eridani or something like that, just off the top of my head, and that that everything that he had experienced was accurately portrayed in the diary. So that was Harley Byrd, Admiral Byrd's son, who was able to confirm that the diaries were accurate, and that Admiral Byrd did indeed have this meeting with the representatives of an inner earth civilization, relayed a message back to his superiors, and was basically muzzled after that.
Fascinating. Scott, I have to ask you on the subject of atomic bombs. From what we've discussed before, Scott, is nuclear technology, nuclear energy, is that the use of it outlawed outside of planet Earth?
Yes, it has been for countless ages. There's no constructive use for nuclear or radioactive isotopes, imbalanced isotopes, or weaponry. There's absolutely no constructive use for them. We get one of these isotopes out of the box, kills everybody. Mm-hmm. They don't power their ships. They don't use that to power their technology. They don't use nuclear power at all. And it's outlawed out there for obvious reasons. The way that people acquired this technology so suddenly after World War II, it wasn't that the German scientists were more brilliant than anyone else. They had some secret treaty-breaking contacts with little gray guys who were ordered to give them and inspire them to develop their technology because Hitler was a totalitarian. When World War II ended, both the United States and the Soviet Union divided up these scientists who still had contacts with these beings, and they incorporated them into our society. They put Wernher von Braun, the head of NASA, who was an SS Nazi officer, and basically they brought with them and disclosed in a classified arena that they had contacts, and then we inherited those same contacts. That's a problem. So we've developed this technology so quickly after World War II, including nuclear and hydrogen bomb technology, by a treaty-breaking totalitarian race that are not in any way, shape, or form respecters of human beings. And this has been monitored ever since, and I can say this factually, although individuals need to find this out for themselves. There have been 12 incidences during the Cold War with the Soviet Union where these knuckleheads on each side actually pushed the bomb to annihilate this world. And in all 12 instances, a couple of craft would fly, these are extraterrestrial craft, would hover over a launch control facility in the U.S. and the Soviet Union, shut down the launch computers, fly away without a word spoken, turn back on the launch computers with the launch mode shut down. It's one of the most highly classified things in this classified arena. You don't want to tell people that there's a race out there that can do this to us. In this case, they kept us from blowing ourselves up. So to that degree, the benevolent races from outside have intervened somewhat. This is ramping up.
It's important to point out there, too, Ted, that that is actually one of the areas that there has been a lot of whistleblowers who have come forward to confirm that indeed UFOs, extraterrestrial vehicles, have been interfering with nuclear weapons, that nuclear weapons silos have gone offline. And so this is something that has happened both in the United States and the Soviet Union. And so that truly is a really powerful way of really preventing any accidental nuclear war by basically making nuclear weapons so unreliable that if anyone wanted to take preemptive action, that they wouldn't know if their weapons could actually be used at all.
Well, my friends around the world, it's nice to know that we've got some good friends, benevolent friends in high places out there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, too, that I have to bring up, two things. There's a section in your book, Dr. Sala, where you mention on page 17 of your Kennedy's Last Stand book, I'll just read this. Professor Hermann Oberth, who pioneered rocket design for Nazi Germany during World War II, moved to Peenemünde, which was their rocket design base, to work with Wernher von Braun in developing the V-2 rocket. After the war, he was asked why the Nazis had been so successful. He answered, quote, "We cannot take credit for our record advancement in certain scientific fields alone. We have been helped." When asked by whom, he replied, "The people of other worlds." So it's clear that both of you are absolutely right on that.
And well, that's a very important thing to keep in mind, that Nazi Germany really did have advanced technologies that they were able to develop through the assistance of extraterrestrial vehicles.
Sure.
And that at the end of the Second World War, as Nazi Germany lay in ruins, that a very young John F. Kennedy was taken on a tour of these facilities. So you can understand why Kennedy, 17 years later, when he became president, would want to know about these extraterrestrial vehicles, because
sure.
In 1945, here he is in defeated Nazi Germany, occupied Germany, touring all of these advanced Nazi facilities, seeing what kind of technologies they had. He was a guest of the Secretary of the Navy, James Forrestal. So he saw all these things at first hand. And so then you fast forward to 1960, he's elected president, and in 61 he assumes office. So one of the first things he's going to do is say, well, what about these extraterrestrial technologies that I saw back in 1945 in Nazi Germany that were
sure.
brought over here under Operation Paperclip, because
sure.
Kennedy was there. He knew about it. So naturally he would want to get to the bottom of all of that, and that's where he became a real threat to MJ-12, because Kennedy knew too much.
Sure. Well, that makes it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, Dr. Sala and Scott. The other thing I wanted to bring up too quickly before I forget is that, you know, you've talked about how we've had outside help in preventing a nuclear war on this planet and destroying ourselves. And Scott, you told me about Fukushima. Now, Fukushima happened back, I think, in March of 2011, if I'm not mistaken. And since that time, 85,000 gallons of highly radioactive water is being dumped in the Pacific on a daily basis. There was a large radioactive plume of water headed from Fukushima to the west coast of the United States, and it was the epicenter of it was going to be Washington State, right off the coast. It contained, according to scientists 6 months ago, it contained 10 times more radiation than all the bombs dropped since Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And 3 months ago, 3-4 months ago, poof, all the radiation is gone. It's much of the radiation now in the Pacific is simply gone. As far as I understand, Fukushima is still 85,000 gallons of highly radioactive water being dumped into the Pacific on a daily basis from Fukushima. There are no plans that I know of at present to curtail it by any Earth government, but the radiation is gone. Scott, would you love to hear your comments on that?
Well, two things I mentioned to Michael earlier, too, that you'd done some water testing up in Washington
mm-hmm.
to verify that the radiation was no longer there, as expected.
Correct.
And from my contacts, it was clear that they eliminated the radiation threat, not only across the United States to a large degree, but from Alaska all the way down to South America.
Amazing.
I haven't gotten any information lately about neutralizing what's still coming out of that plant, but I can tell you it's not going very far.
Mm-hmm.
The worst threat came in the air when they exploded, all four of them.
Oh, okay.
That gets into the jet stream, and then you get, you know, there's deep radioactive particles, highly dangerous, even detected in deep Himalayan well water. So
oh my goodness.
Most of that came from the nuclear bomb testing they did above ground before actually extraterrestrials finally convinced them to put it underground or stop doing it.
Right, right.
And all this is classified, but the people would want to see why or how this world's destiny, destructive destiny, prophesied destiny, has been significantly altered for the better just a little over 3.5 years ago. That goes into a decision made off-world because of a new tool that they've acquired to neutralize the subconscious implant programming that controls beings in a safe way. And this means for the hidden government people, for the reptilian, the tall and short grays, it's a bigger problem than just taking care of it on Earth. It had to be solved out in space as
sure,
well first.
Sure, sure. What do you, I know that you said before that for a lot of leaders on this planet, I know things are changing for the better, but they're not really in control of what they do. And the reason I say that, Scott, is because last year, the President Obama shut down 8 of the air and water federal radiation monitoring stations in the United States and then increased the amount of so-called acceptable radiation from any nuclear power plant, the so-called acceptable limit be raised by 10,000% to the highest maximum limit in the world, actually. How would you explain that?
Well, it's simple. I mean, before he became president, he had some great ideals to disclose a lot of what has been covered up to people, like mm-hmm. Kennedy wanted to do.
Sure.
And after Eisenhower's last year, you know, in his parting speech, he warned people about the growing threat of the power of the military-industrial complex, lest your constitutional rights be suspended. Mm-hmm. He watched the power of the presidency stripped from what he helped create
sure.
after and with Truman
mm-hmm.
in his last year.
Mm-hmm.
And every president after that has been excluded from knowing the deeper truths about this classified arena,
mm-hmm.
which means the presidents-elect are not in a need-to-know basis for
mm-hmm.
that level of classification.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your question, I think, was, can you ask me that question again, please?
Sure, sure. How would you explain the government, federal government's decision to shut down all the air and radiation?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you notice how a person is on a campaign trail,
right.
and their eyes don't blink when they're talking to people. But after
mm-hmm.
they get elected, if you watch them speak, they blink all the time psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
That simply means they're covering something up
interesting.
Or outright lying to people.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody doing that who is normal or benevolent, it's clear that they are no longer in control of what they're doing. And how it's done to them
mm-hmm.
is not done through little metal electronic implants and surgery. They don't need to do that. Electronic device worn the belt buckle of one of the diabolical ETs can be pushed, and the terrorizing implants can be implanted in their electromagnetic field around their body in a subconscious way, so they're not aware of it. Now, what happens is that when people try to recover that which was taken from them or suppressed, their ability to discern
mm-hmm.
truth from deception,
mm-hmm.
when that's done, it plays across, if they try to do it, it plays across the nervous system so that they're affected in a terrorizing way, and they go in the opposite direction, but they don't see or hear what's doing it. So that kind of abuse, that kind of technology, has pretty much been implemented worldwide, and it is currently in the process, from what I am in contact with, to reverse all of that.
Wonderful.
People are going to see that more and more in the days, weeks, months, and the next few years.
Wonderful, wonderful. I know in our private conversation, Scott, you've mentioned that if people are controlled with these implants, often their eyes are very wide, and it's almost like their soul's fighting it. But it's like being a deer in the headlights of a car.
Well, you know, if you met and talked with any of them, they would just seem personable and like people. You know, I mean, they have their personality. They might tell a joke or whatever, but you can tell that their eyes blink a great deal.
Sure.
And it also, you get a feeling from them that you can't quite put a finger on, but it's not comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's what most people can tell. Someone can stand before you, political or otherwise, or from a race from another planet, and if you get an uplifting feeling, you're fine. If you
mm-hmm.
start to get the hair stand up on the back of your head,
mm-hmm.
move away.
Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about this subject before, Scott, and I'd love your response to this too, Michael, but let's say Abraham Lincoln was alive today, or even Thomas Jefferson, and we reelected him president now. You're saying basically, Scott, that it doesn't matter who's elected now, because they're all controlled? Is that?
Once they get in the White House, yes.
Okay. All right.
It should be clear to everybody that anybody talking in front of a TV screen from the White House or anybody associated with them,
mm-hmm.
when they talk, the people all over the world know they're not being told the truth. It's obvious.
Right, right.
Can I just kind of jump in there?
Yes, of course. Please, please.
I think it's important to emphasize that any young, ambitious politician is marked out very early on in his career as someone who can go places.
Very good point.
And that politician is given opportunities to kind of get in with the in crowd. And those opportunities often lead to them being put in compromising situations, you know, whether it's with underage children, sure, prostitutes, anything like that. And if they kind of like take these opportunities, inverted commas, if they take those opportunities, then they advance. But at the same time, they have given material to those that are kind of in the loop, whereby later on they can be controlled and manipulated. And I think that this is something that happens all the time in all nations, especially in the United States. And so any kind of politician such as Obama that rises high, or before him William Clinton that rises high, it's because at some point they were identified by people in the in crowd who basically compromised them and were able to get control over them, and then had these very ambitious politicians kind of elevated to positions whereby they can succeed in becoming a governor or a senator or even president of the United States.
Well, you could look at it this way too, my friends, in that basically, as a species, our free will's been taken away from us, and the democracy's been dismantled, and we're under the control of another race of ETs from elsewhere who definitely don't have our best interests at heart. Would you say that's an apt characterization?
I think that's very good, and that it's important to emphasize that it really is an illusory democracy. An illusory freedom is the most sinister form of control, because people think they're free. And, right, and of course, you know, we see examples of that in our Western democracies, where we have these regular elections, you know, where 51% or 53%, you know, vote one way or the other. And because of the election process, we think we're free, because we think, okay, well, you know, we voted and we didn't win this time, but next time we'll win. But the thing is, the outcome is manipulated by those that have the resources, that have the means to be able to engineer outcomes that further their agenda. So at the end of the day, you know, what we're left with is really an illusory freedom, which is basically underpinned by this kind of sham democracy that we experience in the Western world. And we think we're free, but in fact, no, we're very highly manipulated.
Interesting.
I wanted to add to that too, Michael. Something very constructive before we run out of time.
Right.
There is an ancient word people can say. It was not native to this planet. It's not copyrighted or owned by any organization on this planet. It can't be. It was brought here from other worlds, and it was brought into creation at the beginning of creation, and it simply has one function, and that is to plug people into be able to perceive purposefully hidden truth on a grand, multidimensional level as beings through the pineal gland in the center of the brain. And I don't want to get into the details of what that does. We may not have the time, but I want to say this word is known as HU, H-U. Anybody in any race, even on other worlds, can sing this or chant it or send it out. And it sets up a vibration, a harmonic frequency, that plugs into the primordial energy that underlies and supports all life. And then people begin to get a connection to those beings and things which are benevolent and highly evolved, and the spiritual protection or protection that comes with it to safely explore hidden truth. Now, anybody on Earth can do this now. Here's the thing. The fact that we're having this conversation on this phone together today is clear evidence that something is happening that is allowing us to do this, to speak about this, to let it be known that this hidden cabal or tyrants from other worlds cannot control. It scares the hell out of them. But it is a benevolent force, which means all beings well, and it just sounds like this when you do it. You can do it silently inside or out loud. May I demonstrate it?
Yes, please. Go right ahead, Scott.
You... When people do this, it vibrates the head upward only, or the center of the brain upward. It goes through the pineal gland to connect into higher frequencies, not only other dimensions, higher dimensions, and beings from out of town that are working with this, who use it on their worlds to keep from ever, and this is important, to keep from ever acquiring a subconscious mind. A normal human being does not have one.
And that means they can remember past lives?
Exactly.
Interesting. I have to tell you, my many friends around the world, that this studio has just become bathed in white light after Scott did his hue. Thank you.
If people do this for, say, 10 minutes before they go to bed at night, mm-hmm. and ask to be shown safely, purposefully hidden truth on a grand multidimensional scale, they will begin to have experiences through this when they put a little effort into it. And then they will be able to tune in and know this stuff for themselves with certainty, in contrast to remaining in speculation, doubt, and fear. It's not important that anybody believe me. I don't want anybody to ever take what I say at face value. But it is important that they try this, because then they will eventually have their own experiences with it.
Fascinating. I just want to take a quick station break. For those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio International with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW. On 11:50 a.m. in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle, Washington, in the United States. We're interviewing two wonderful UFO researchers today and contactee. We have on the line Dr. Michael Sala from Hawaii, one of the world's best UFO researchers, and Scott Lemriel, a Hollywood writer of the Sayreese Agenda, who's been a contactee of the Galactic Alliance, a group of benevolent, mostly human ETs, for the past 52 years. Oh, thank you so much, Scott, for sharing the hue with my many listeners. I know it will help everyone out. And again, this studio has turned completely white after you said that. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Michael, what books are you working on now? I'm sure you're working on many different projects. I'd love to. I'm sure my listeners would love to know what other projects you're working on now.
Well, it's very interesting that Scott demonstrated the hue, because I think that really is important, that we come up with solutions that, most of my work over the last 13 years, having been involved in ET UFO research, has been to try and really fathom exactly what is going on. And, I've written 4 books on exopolitics, and each one goes a little bit deeper into what is going on. And I think what really is important is that at a certain point, you need to start putting your energies into the solution. And I think there's that really good adage about that within each of us, we have like two, within each of our hearts, we have like these two wolves, a white wolf of light and illumination, and a dark wolf of darkness and greed and power and so forth. And it's like, well, what way is the human heart going to ultimately decide to go? And it's like, well, whichever wolf you feed with your attention. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that we keep that in mind, that it's always good to be balanced and always good to try and understand exactly what is wrong with the planet. But if we get overly preoccupied with what's wrong with the planet, and we don't put our energies into creating what are the solutions, then we become part of the problem. And I'm very happy that Scott is emphasizing some of these ancient techniques, such as the Hue mantra, to kind of elevate our consciousness, because I think that is really what we need to do. We need to also put our energies into the solution. And so that's really what I'm doing now at the moment. The last few months I've become very involved with something called the Kingdom of Hawaii, which is a sovereignty movement here in the Hawaiian Islands. And I've been helping them put together a sanctuary for extraterrestrial contact. And so we are moving forward in different ways in making this sanctuary something that is a place for extraterrestrial visitors who share our values of universal consciousness, uplifting the human condition and bringing the spirit, that extraterrestrials who share those kinds of values, that we welcome them to come and land and to visit us here in the territory or the sovereign lands of the Kingdom of Hawaii. So I've been putting my energies into that particular solution, and it's interesting that we have had some cooperation by the nearby volcano, which is Kilauea, and that began a lava flow on June 27, and that lava flow began on the very day that the Hawaii Star Visitor Sanctuary was opened up. So we don't think that's a coincidence. And also the fact that the lava flow is now moving in a way whereby the kind of road system is going to be cut off, making this area much more secluded and cutting it off from the rest of the Big Island of Hawaii. We think that is also part of the solution here in terms of establishing a model of what the future society will be like. You know, what is the bridgehead to a new world? I mean, where are you going to establish a bridgehead to this world of higher consciousness, of more evolved beings using extraterrestrial technologies, being able to interact openly and freely with extraterrestrial beings? Where is that going to happen? Well, I would really love to think that here on the Big Island in the Puna area, where we have all this new earth, this new land created by lava flow, that can be this new bridgehead to a new world.
Fascinating. Scott, I'd love your comment on that.
Oh, it's wonderful. Michael asked me that the other day, and I wanted my view on it, and I said, I think anything you're doing along that line is beneficial. Mm-hmm. Because it just taps into, they have the technology if they want to protect that area of land. There are nothing negative, no reptilians or government can get anywhere near it mm-hmm. if they want to do it. So inviting something like that and establishing a place and manning it and being humble about it, yeah, it's a great idea, mm-hmm. of course.
Wonderful, wonderful. Scott, what kinds of projects are you involved with now?
You know, I'm put out the third edition of the Savers Agenda, mm-hmm. in both trade paperback and ebook. It's available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any online retailer bookstores through my website at paralleltime.com. This third edition just came out, get rid of some typos. It's a work in progress, and I'm going to put out a fourth edition, I think, next May when my two-year contract runs up, that will have a section in it, and I wanted to get your feedback, a section that will have techniques people can do to explore purposefully hidden truth or reveal in each of those chapters.
Mm,
and
fantastic.
I think that would be kind of a fourth edition workbook kind of thing, and that would be a section in the back with references to the chapter that each technique is for.
Oh, I think that'd be a wonderful idea for people. I know that many of my listeners would love to see a workbook, Scott.
Something... Michael, what about you? Michael?
In terms of book projects?
Yeah, no, I'm asking you, what do you think about the Savers Agenda having a work function book in the back that has techniques for people to personally get in contact with and have experiences about what are revealed in the book for themselves?
Oh, well, that's great. I think the Savers Agenda, I mean, the book itself really opens a person up to these potentials, to this future world that really is something that lies ahead and something that we can manifest through our voluntary will. And I think that having exercises that people can do at the end of the book mm-hmm. that give them an idea of how they can make this possibility something that manifests in our reality, that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's my main focus for being on radio with Dr. Sala or with in person at conferences, is to demonstrate and take people on a little journey about how to connect with this stuff so they can have experiences for themselves. That's all that matters to me. I've written three books called The Parallel Time Trilogy, which Dr. Sala includes Lemurian Atlantis and Polar Shifts and Extraterrestrials, both good and bad. Those books were written before the Sayres Agenda and were preparatory for me to be able to even comprehend what's in the Sayres Agenda. Those books will start to be published next year. The first one's called The Emerald Doorway, and they're about the hidden history of Earth and our solar system, which people have a right to know. But more importantly, they have a right to have it woken up in them.
Oh, interesting. And Scott, you'll be attending our psychic conference up here November 21st through the 23rd. And for those who are attending, they'll have the pleasure of meeting Scott and attending his workshop on these exercises, too. And I wanted to say also, Dr. Sala, you're more than welcome to come, my friend, if you have time. It's just before Christmas, weekend before Thanksgiving.
Well, that's great. I really hope it goes well. I would love to be there, although I think just the dates I am going to Brazil for an event down there around the same time.
Okay.
So I may be flying over Seattle.
Well, if you change planes here, please let me know, and I'd be happy to meet you. I'd love to meet you at the airport.
Sure, no problem. I'll do that.
That would be great. That would be great.
I'll be going to a conference in Norway from the 10th through the 12th, a UFO disclosure conference
in October?
Next month.
Next up.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Wonderful.
And then back, and then up to your event.
Right. And then up here in November. Wonderful. Wonderful. For those just tuning in, this is the Out of This World radio show with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle on the west coast of the United States. We're listening to you're listening to an interview with Scott Lemriel in Los Angeles, the author of The Say Race Agenda and a contactee of benevolent ETs for the past 52 years, and Dr. Michael Sella from Hawaii, one of the world's best and most interesting, in my opinion, UFO researchers. Scott and Michael, I know there's some doom and gloomers out there, and I'm not in that camp. I think the future of humanity is very bright, and that's why I started my radio program, and I continue to say that on every show that I think the future of humanity is very bright, and I wanted to aid in that effort to raise human consciousness to make this a better, more happier place to live. But both of you, I'm just curious what you see for the future of humanity.
Well, I'm very optimistic. I really think that we are on the verge of an enormous change. For me, the big question is how many people are going to embrace that change and step into the reality that that embrace creates for them, mm-hmm. as opposed to those that stay in another mindset and really manifest a different world, something which is going to be kind of like a continuation of the old doom and gloom scenario.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's really the key, because there are many people who are ready to move forward and embrace a positive vision of the future, to embrace things such as Scott describes in his book, The Series Agenda, where you have a world which is free of the kind of the hatreds and the divisions, one where people's differences are recognized and duly acknowledged, but yet that's not something that becomes a point of conflict and something of trying to dominate or exterminate. It's just that you have differences, and you have different races with their different abilities, and this is something that can be embraced and can be mutually enriching. And so that is a world that I certainly want to put my energies into helping create. And there are those that truly do get stuck in the doom and gloom scenarios, that they are, that it's really a kind of just a circular type of reasoning, really, that, well, you know, if you understand the doom and gloom, then you can free yourself from it. Well, you know, that's a partial truth. I mean, you understand the doom and gloom to the extent that, yes, there is some negative things going on, but then you have to embrace the future or embrace some transformative mechanisms or values within yourself. But if you just stay in that doom and gloom cycle, then, you know, you're just going to perpetuate that, you know, whether it's going to be in some other world or some other existence. But essentially, yeah, people are really trapped in that doom and gloom cycle, and you know, you can encourage them, you can give them possibilities to come out of it, but ultimately it's up to each individual themselves to decide whether or not they're going to embrace a positive future or get stuck in the whole doom and gloom cycle again and again.
Wonderful. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Michael. It's, if people are giving back their true innate abilities as human beings, which they don't have right now, and most people are aware something's been taken from them, if that's first given back to them, which is en route and is greenlit and cannot be reversed, it's coming, then they can choose. And I find that beings, once they're awake with those innate ability to perceive truth, they will always choose a benevolent course. In the meantime, if they're being misused to use their imagination towards their own destructive future, that's a misuse of the gift of imagination. And most people are no longer in control of knowing that, and yet mm-hmm. some of us are. Mm-hmm. And that's the miracle of this whole thing, that some of us can and do and are talking and discussing this stuff on the air, like Michael and you, Ted, and myself and others, and they're beginning to sense that something of a benevolent nature is starting to take place. But what's important is they begin to have experiences with it themselves. That's the reason, and the only reason, that I demonstrated the hue, because I know very well what it does.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I've mentioned this before on the air in my other shows, my friends, but Nostradamus made a prediction in the 16th century that during the 2030s and 2040s, it would be a start of 1,000 years of 1,000 golden years of spiritual evolvement here on the planet, at the end of which we would become a spacefaring species, basically. And I hold true to that. I think that you can look at a glass, for example, as either being half full or half empty. And I think it's always, no matter how times do get tough, for things to look at it as half full. I used to live in India for 2.5 years, and one of the many lessons that I learned in India was that we are all God's children, and there's a lot to be said for replacing conflict with cooperation, and certainly love of each other and humanity. And like I said, we're all God's children. So, Scott and Michael, we've got about 10 minutes or so left on the show. And are there any other topics either of you would like to discuss? We've got some time left.
You, Michael, you got something you want to further explore?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that we do have a very real likelihood that in the next year or two that there are going to be some major announcements or information coming forward about extraterrestrial life, whereby people are going to be given information which will be kind of like partially true but also partly false.
Right.
And
yep.
I think it's important that people be mindful that the information that comes out, especially when it comes through official channels, that there's always an agenda there. So, for example, it's very likely that in the next 6 months to a year, we can have a major announcement coming from the Vatican, where Pope Francis is probably going to make some announcement concerning extraterrestrial life, and that on the surface, this would seem to be a really good thing, that this is something that, oh, okay, great, the Vatican is taking a positive stance on something that's highly controversial and kind of showing the way for, you know, the Christians to how to face this reality. And certainly there will be elements of that which will be very positive and worth embracing. But on the other hand, we always need to be mindful that, you know, there's an agenda. Anything that comes forward from any government agency or major institution such as the Vatican, especially when it concerns extraterrestrial life, you always need to look, well, what's the agenda here? Who really benefits? And that's very important, because I think ultimately, and I think this is really where Scott's work is very important, is that we need to be more discerning. We really need to be switched on so that we know what's going on, because there are people or beings and institutions that have been pulling the wool over our eyes for thousands and thousands of years.
Right.
And to be able to kind of like step into this new future, we need to make choices and we need to be more discerning. And I think part of that discernment needs to be educating ourselves, learning about the different ET groups, learning about different organizations, what they've been doing, and at the same time preparing ourselves for a really wonderful new future.
Mm-hmm. Really glad you brought that up, Michael. I wanted to say to people, in addition to that, if an announcement comes, and I know they're planning a false one, where they would announce that we've been working with good human ETs since World War II, and we had to cover it up because of the Cold War of the Soviet Union, something like that scenario. If they try that, and yet they say we still have to keep all of our other programs classified for the security of the planet, I would say to people, do not believe it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as that classified system is there, they're still lying. That's your way of discerning whether it's a true disclosure or another agenda disclosure, mm-hmm. just to placate people. My view of it is that they're going to attempt that, but with the people I'm in touch with, they're going to be set free a little more before that announcement. The announcement that will come will be, because of intervention from outside, a far, far, far more revealing one.
Well, wasn't last year there was a big flap in the news media about all the conflicts in Syria And weren't there certain sectors who wanted a world war starting in Syria, and that didn't happen? I think the people in this country, the United States, didn't want it.
No third world war has ever been allowed to happen.
Right.
This is 2000, almost 15.
Right, exactly.
No nuclear war, because they can't.
Right.
And they don't want to tell people that they can't.
Mm-hmm.
They lose their power base. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have a nuclear war, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted, thanks for bringing up that Syria issue, because this is a good example of how it's important to practice discernment.
Yeah.
Now the term ISIS, that is being used to describe these really ruthless Middle Eastern jihadis or terrorists that are beheading Westerners. And of course, now you have media saturation of ISIS as being this really negative grouping in the Middle East. It's important to keep in mind that ISIS was also a very important goddess in Egyptian mythology, and it's very likely that those extraterrestrials that truly do want to help uplift our planet, that amongst them is a very enlightened, very powerful feminine energy called ISIS. And so what we see here is an attempt to kind of like use psychological warfare techniques to poison the Western or the global mindset against this term ISIS, so that anyone in the future that kind of like appears that wants to help the planet but has that name ISIS, or has that association with this ancient Egyptian goddess ISIS, that being is kind of like distrusted, and that's how psychological warfare operates. You try and condition people psychologically to get them to think in a certain way, which ultimately benefits your agenda. And if the agenda is not to have cooperation with the group of extraterrestrials associated with the ISIS energies, then yes, you come up with this kind of contrived Middle Eastern terrorist group called ISIS, and that achieves your goal.
One of the things I've heard anyway is that ISIS actually was created by the U.S. intelligence agencies to go after Assad in Syria last year. It was funded with millions and millions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer funds, plus the latest finest weaponry from our military. And of course, their offensive against Assad in the north failed. So now they've turned around and gone kind of like southeast toward Iraq, and now our government now is funding the Iraqi opposition. So it's crazy. The whole thing is fabricated, in my opinion. And it would have been better off if we just stayed out in the first place, because we would never had this kind of conflict.
Yeah, this is why I always share with people that it's clear these people are not in control of what they're doing, and some other race, some other power that are not respecters of human beings are.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want to make it clear. People are going to find this out on their own, that all of this is being monitored in more detail and recorded than the NSA or any government on this planet, hidden or otherwise, can ever do. And they know where everybody is. They know where all the players are. They know what they're doing. And if they want to pull the plug on this in a benevolent way, they most certainly can do it. I really wanted to leave the show with you, both of your permissions, with one uplifting cue for the benefit of the listeners worldwide, if I may.
Feel free. We've got 6 minutes left. I don't know if you wanted to do it for 6 minutes, but go right ahead, Scott.
No, I'll just do it once. And allow people can do this. When they do it, just pause after it's done with your eyes closed and look and listen. Don't try to make anything happen.
All right.
Just look and listen. Ask to be shown purposefully hidden truth. If you do it with sincerity, I can only guarantee that people will come into the circumstance where that will be revealed to them.
Well, I have to tell you before you start, back on July 25th, I had Dr. Masaru Emoto from Tokyo on the show. And, of course, he's a wonderful, wonderful scientist. And we had done an intention experiment about 3:30 p.m. Pacific time in Seattle, where we prayed for and sent good thoughts to the Palestinians and Israelis for them to at least do a ceasefire so they could get the wounded out and get, you know, medical supplies and food to each side. And within about within 5 hours, they spontaneously announced a 12-hour ceasefire. So I certainly believe in the power of intention. And please, please, do your hue now. I appreciate that.
And I've learned not to pray for people or send anything to people without their permission. It's kind of a black magic, psychic stuff. It's in a negative way, and I don't do that.
Okay.
But I can work with the Hugh and friends from out of town who know and are not part of this trap, who know how to best go about setting people free and stopping war on a universal galactic level, dealing with a single planet. So I work you for the benefit of all life on this Earth now. You If people do that for 10 minutes before they go to bed at night, they're going to begin to create a bridge between where they go when they leave their bodies at night, which they all do but are not aware of it, and be able to bring back much more of what's taking place.
Wonderful, Scott. Thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. I think it really helped. I know the light in this studio has even gotten lighter than it was before. We were completely covered in white light here, my many friends. We've got a few minutes left. Dr. Sala, would you like to make some concluding remarks? And then I'll turn the show over to Scott to say some things.
Sure. Well, I think that really it's important that people just really embrace something uplifting, something positive in this whole area of extraterrestrial life. Part of the growth of anyone involved in this area is to kind of like ascertain exactly what is going on. And so a lot of it, unfortunately, is very dark, and there's good reason to kind of like understand that. But at the end, you really can only transcend the darkness by embracing the light. You know, and the darkness ultimately is dissipated in a room when you bring in that light, that candle. You know, that one candle can light up a whole dark room. And as much as you go into a room and try and understand the dark and reason with it, or try and understand its dynamics, ultimately the only thing that's going to dispel the darkness is the light. And so we need to do that. We need to embrace things like Scott's been telling us with this ancient technique of the hue, or whatever positive transformative technique or information you have. Embrace that, because that's ultimately how we're going to bring in the light and dispel the dark.
I couldn't agree with you more, Michael. Absolutely. Before I give the floor to you, Scott, I just want to say I want to thank everyone around the world for listening today. You've been listening to a wonderful interview with Dr. Michael Sala, one of the world's foremost UFO researchers. He's on the phone now from Hawaii. And Scott Lemriel, the author of The Sayre's Agenda. I just want to say quickly, too, 1 week from today, next Friday, we will have Gordana Bernat in an interview. She has over 86,000 followers on Twitter. She's famous in Sweden and in Europe for uplifting people and improving people's lives to become the beautiful spiritual beings they truly are. It should be a truly interesting and awesome interview, and right in line with what Dr. Sala is saying and Scott's saying as well. And Scott, we've got about a minute and a half left, and I want you to have the rest of the time.
Okay. The reason that I get on radio, and I know Michael does this too, anybody that's consciously aware is going to do this because they're motivated by the heart energy to be a channel for constructive good. That means they choose at some point when they're awake enough to use their imagination in only one way, because there's only one right way to use it, and that is to purposefully have the fire awoken in oneself to create through the imaginative faculty only benevolent things for all life. That puts you in the category of connecting with beings on a galactic level and on a multidimensional level, and master teachers and all kinds of things. Then we start to work in that way. We're passing our tests for why we exist at all. Mm-hmm. We're designed, we're actually, all human beings' true purpose is to become fully trustworthy, conscious co-creators with the source behind all life. And that means the benevolent sources in other worlds, other realities, and higher than that. So when we go through whatever technique we can, as Michael said, that brings about an upliftment of positive results, we're using the imagination to solve a problem and not add anything negative to it. The reason I wrote the Sayre's Agenda, and where I got the direct information from to write it, and who my sponsors were, and so forth and so on, was to bring a channel here to begin this process of worldwide transfer, uplifting transformation.
Scott, we've run out of time, my friend. Thank you so much, Scott and Dr. Sella, for being on the show today. And I hope everyone has an out-of-this-world weekend. Take care, everyone.